This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Good morning, my friends. Welcome to it. It is Wednesday here on the Steve Gruber Show. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you checking in. Big day yesterday. I broke the story here, and I'm happy that we did. About chronic wasting disease in the Michigan deer herd. This is going to be devastating. Devastating to the state's deer herd. The DNR, to money coming into the state, to landowners like myself that happen to be in the affected core area. And a lot more. Chronic wasting disease is a disease transmitted through the infectious self-multiplying proteins known as prions, contained in saliva and other bodily fluids of infected animals. In addition, soil can be contaminated by those bodily fluids, and for long periods of time, nobody is quite sure. And the Michigan Department of Natural Resources confirming this yesterday, that this deadly neurological disease is here, and it's in free-ranging white-tailed deer found in Meridian Township in Ingham County. An animal can live with CWD and spread it for years, depending on how quickly its health deteriorates. And those that are infected, well, they just look awful. The chronic wasting disease is an apt description. Those on the far end of the disease are little more than skin and bones. I mean, they're horrible thing to look at. So as a result, the state has established its core CWD area. Several things will be happening there. This includes Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties, at least parts thereof. The townships involved here, Alden, Delhi, Lansing, Meridian, Wheatfield, and Williamstown townships in Ingham County, Bath and DeWitt townships in Clinton County, and Woodhull Township in Shiawassee County. Now, to me, this seems like an unusually small area. When this happened in Wisconsin, they killed 25,000 deer right after the get-go because they wanted to make sure the CWD was contained. The disease in this case was found in a six-year-old doe that was behaving strangely in Meridian Township. And again, that's just east of East Lansing. Hazlet and Okemos would be two towns you would find in Meridian Township. So now the state has established this core area where unlimited antlerless deer tags would be available, for example. But also trained professionals, snipers, will be coming in from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And it's going to get worse because I've also learned the DNR is investigating at least one other case, possible case, of CWD 16 miles to the east near the village of Weberville. Now, that one they won't confirm, but I can assure you, I was right when I broke the story yesterday, and I'm right about this. In fact, I have pictures of the deer that is currently sick. The deer is still alive on that Weberville farm. They're trying to find it, euthanize it, and get it tested. But if you go to stevegruber.com, or a better place yet, the Steve Gruber Show on Facebook, you can find the story. The pictures attached to the stories that I wrote yesterday have that infected deer, that very deer, and you can look at it and decide for yourself. Now, these snipers will come in with 223s, with silencers, and work primarily at night. That's how this works. In a minute here, in fact, we're going to have Chad Stewart from the DNR is going to join us here in just a few minutes to talk about how devastating this could be, potentially, to the deer herd. And what it's going to mean to hunting in the state of Michigan, what it's going to mean to the finances of the DNR. We'll find out a whole lot more about what's going on. And find out what the long term is this. For those of us that live in these areas, this core area, deer hunting's pretty much over for a very long time. They're going to kill them all. And basically that's what they have to do. They're going to kill them all. The disease, relatively new to Michigan, but 23 states and two Canadian provinces have found CWD either in free-ranging or privately owned cervids, deer. The deer will be unusually thin, bone thin, a bag of bones, if you will. They'll be acting strangely. If you see this, please call the DNR Disease Lab at 517-336-5030 or fill out and submit the online observation report found on the DNR website. The disease can also affect moose and elk. There's no, just so you know, there's no cause and effect between this disease and people, but the DNR just the same. And I mean, you wouldn't eat one of these deer anyway. Oh, roadkill's illegal to possess or consume as well as part of this core area action. Not that you would consume these deer anyway, but if you had one that was sick, you're not. They advise you not to eat the deer because. Just because it's not a good idea. No, there's no, and so just to head off any hysteria, though, no evidence that these deer have ever, that this disease has ever jumped, if you will, to a new species being you and I, never has that happened. And don't kid yourself, the animal rights people will come in anyway saying, you can't do this. You can't kill thousands of deer. It'll be, you know, it's not right. The animal rights groups would rather have all these deer die slow, torturous deaths than have them euthanized. That's the world they live in. The veterinarian, in a related story in Genesee County, the veterinarian at Genesee County Animal Control stepping down from her job because of threats, verbal abuse, and pressure from animal rights groups to avoid euthanasia at the shelter altogether. Yeah, it's, you know. Recently, there's become increasingly more pressure at the shelter to improve the stats of the animals that are being reduced and reducing the euthanasia rate. Michelle Cohn wrote in a May 15 letter to the county obtained by the Flint Journal of the Freedom of Information Act. Being threatened by animal rights people, she has said, I can't do this anymore. She says she cannot be repeatedly slandered and thrown under the bus for doing what is right for the animals. 14 after the hour, it's the Steve Gerber Show. Wednesday here, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966, and we'll talk more about the chronic wasting disease here in Michigan because it is it'll be financially devastating, devastating to the deer herd. It changes the way of life for a lot of folks. Just flat out change it. We'll talk about that in a minute. In Texas, heavy rain that has drenched central part of that state is apparently going to linger through the rest of the week. State and local officials prepared to scrutinize their warning system, and rescuers renewed the search for 11 people still missing for 3 days from the tourist town of Wimberley. Their whole town, their whole house got washed away. The National Weather Service called for a 20 to 40% chance of thunderstorms through the rest of the week in Houston. More storms are also in store for Central Texas. In all, 17 people have been confirmed killed in Texas and Oklahoma by the holiday weekend storms. 4 fatalities were reported in Houston and 4 in Central Texas. The victims included a 14-year-old who was found with his dog in a storm drain. Also a high school senior who died after her car was caught in high water, and a man whose mobile home was destroyed by a reported tornado. In Houston, floodwaters affected virtually every part of the city, paralyzing some areas. Firefighters carrying out more than 500 water rescues. Pretty intense in Texas, to say the least. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said that he has declared a disaster in 46 counties, adding the damage from the flooding stretch from the Red River to the Rio Grande. It's pretty intense in Texas right now, to say the least. Pretty intense in Texas, to say the least. So they're trying to keep that under, you know, and the rain's still coming. The rain is still coming there. Also yesterday, a big story out of the federal court system. Obama's DREAM Act shot down again. Another big setback for the DREAM Act. His second-term agenda seems to be in the hands of the courts now for President Obama. Same-sex marriage, Obamacare, climate change, and, of course, immigration. And in many cases, there is significant doubt about whether his signature initiatives will stand legal scrutiny. You know, Franklin Roosevelt went through all of this. Time after time after time, the court struck down his New Deal plans. The latest blow to Obama's second term came Tuesday when a federal appeals court in New Orleans denied the administration's request to move forward with implementing his executive action on immigration to defer deportation for millions of undocumented immigrants. Texas, along with 25 other states, have sued to have it shelved. The drama is sure to ensue for months, writes the Washington Post's David Nakamura. And throwing a doubt whether the fight over all of Obama's executive actions on immigration will be settled before he leaves office in January 2017. Other matters are in the court's hands, of course, same-sex marriage. Obama, the first American president to support same-sex marriage, though his public evolution apparently was slower than his personal one. Before he backed gay marriage, he called for repealing the Defense of Marriage Act, and since he has ordered federal agencies to recognize same-sex marriages and partnerships like any other married couple, but the Supreme Court will have the final say on that. Obamacare, of course, the president's signature health care reform law, has already survived one Supreme Court challenge in 2012, 5-4. But this time around, the court is mulling another major portion of the law, whether the federal government can subsidize health insurance for low and middle income people who bought their insurance on the federally run website healthcare.gov. That being in states that didn't set up their own exchanges, challengers say the law was written only to support subsidies in the 16 states that set up the exchanges. On climate change, Obama told the U.S. Coast Guard cadets last week that failing to act on climate change, will set the course for disaster. He considers that to be the most extreme threat to America, well, to the world, in the face of ISIS and everything else going on. At the same time, the Supreme Court is debating whether his method of cutting down on greenhouse gas emissions is even constitutional, whether it's even legal. The Supreme Court heard arguments back in March on whether the Environmental Protection Agency's crackdown on coal and other power plants' mercury emissions failed to consider undue costs in the power plants. The justices expected to share their decision in June, but it is expected to be just an early challenge of the president's executive climate change initiatives, say environmental watchers. I mean, if you're starting to sense a theme here, you're right. The president has stepped out of line so often with his executive actions that he's run afoul of the Constitution time and again. And then, of course, it's that the bid on immigration. And House Speaker John Boehner considering to put to a vote that is a separate lawsuit against the president for expanding the program in November. This is in addition to the vote the House of Representatives took last summer to sue the president over his overall use of executive authority. Neither of the congressional lawsuits, by the way, have made their way to the higher court. Finally, the courts are stepping in. Finally, it seems that somebody's saying, no, you can't just do whatever you want, whenever you want. Thankfully, finally. This hour of the Steve Gruber program brought to you in part by AmericanMetalRoofs.com. Enter our giveaway for a new metal roof for your home at AmericanMetalRoofs.com. Also, if you're looking for a job, this could be the place. American Metal Roofs looking for installers and sales representatives. Go to AmericanMetalRoofs.com to find out more.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
As the moon shall rise.
Wednesday, my friends, here on The Steve Gruber Show, the phone number 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Devastating news. There's no other way to describe it. Devastating news for the state of Michigan because chronic wasting disease has been found right in the heart of the state in Meridian Township, which seems unusual to me. But there's now an action plan, an emergency action plan in place by the DNR. They've had this for, you know, years. In case of emergency, well, they get to break glass now. Joining me now to talk more about it, Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR. Chad, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Obviously, you're intimately involved with whitetail deer and deer management and so forth in your position with the DNR. So, first of all, give me an idea. How is it that a whitetail deer, a six-year-old doe, can be found in the center of the state? I thought this disease was highly contagious among the deer, and here it is. It's like a lone case. At least it's a lone case so far, right in the center of the state. How do you think something like that can happen?
That's a great question, and unfortunately, I don't have the exact answers yet. We're still looking to determine, see if we can determine how it came into the state. What we do know is that the genetics for the deer that tested positive places it in Ingham County. So, you know, the deer was born in Ingham County. What we also know is that the prion, which is the infectious agent, is not native to Ingham County. So somehow this disease got in here, and how that exactly happened, we're not sure yet.
Is it possible, and there's been travel bans, I hunt a lot, and I know that if you hunt in different states that have CWD, Wisconsin, for example, a good example, that if you kill a deer there, you're not supposed to bring back the certain parts of the deer, the brain, the bone, so on and so forth. But if that happened and this prion can live in the soil, can survive for a period of time, a fairly long period of time, some people think, is it possible a deer could have been contaminated that way?
Yeah, and that's certainly a likely scenario. You know, either infectious dead or live animal came into the state somehow. And we have regulations in place to prevent that from happening. But, you know, it only takes one person to, you know, knowingly or unknowingly sort of skirt that those regulations, and what's left is sort of a cleanup duty. You know, we find it and then we get kicked into surveillance mode for at least 3 years at this point.
So this disease is devastating to the deer that it infects. I mean, it's a frankly, Chad, it looks like a horrible way to die.
Yeah, it's you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. So what this disease does, it essentially attacks the central nervous system, and it essentially creates microscopic holes in the brain tissue. And obviously, if it eats enough away at the brain tissue, the deer start having neurological disorders, and essentially they stop eating, and they don't know where they're at. They are essentially like zombies. And that's one of the best symptoms, you know, that these deer are sort of not knowing of their surroundings, and then they're easily approachable. They start getting very skinny, so their body condition suffers. They start salivating and drooling. They start obviously developing other symptoms consistent with an attack on the central nervous system, you know, circling, head bobbing, and whatnot. So they're really just a shell of themselves, and it's really sad to see.
So when you say it's a cleanup process, okay, so, and we're on the phone this morning with Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR, who spends a good portion of his professional career studying white-tailed deer and so forth. The cleanup response here is going to include several things. You have a core area here to try to contain the disease, which you have no idea whether it's contained or not. To start with, you have this one deer that tested positive. Who knows? The deer could have had it since it was, you know, a young deer, and it could have transmitted the disease. We don't know at this point. But the cleanup will involve containing, you know, the area. There will be sharpshooters brought in, my understanding, talking to other folks in the DNR, that will come in and eradicate as many deer as possible. And then after that, there will be an unlimited doe tags given out. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Chad, you want to kill them all.
Well, we know it's impossible to kill all the deer, and we don't want all the deer gone. What we're into is containing the disease. So the first thing that we need to do is determine whether or not the disease is established. All we've done so far is determine that the disease is present. So that's where some of the sharpshooters come in, is to start getting samples right away. But we're certainly going to supplement that with hunter sampling as well. And so that's why we have a mandatory check-in for hunters this year in the 9 township area that's surrounding the positive animal. So once we can effectively determine whether the disease is established or not, that's when we start implementing and revising some of our management plan to see if our actions are be consistent with if it's possible to eradicate this disease, or if we're simply in a contained mode.
Now, as a scientist, which you are, and I appreciate your professionalism, one of the next questions that people are going to ask, people that are unfamiliar, is, can this be transmitted to people? Can I get sick from being around a deer that has this? It's a common question.
Yeah, and it's an important question, and so far the answer that we have is no. This disease has been established out west in places like Colorado and Wyoming for over 30 years. And people living out there, obviously game is a major part of their life, and they've not noticed any increase in human-related prion diseases that might be associated with consuming infected deer. And they've done several laboratory tests, and they just simply cannot transmit this disease to primates in a traditional fashion, you know, through oral ingestion. So every data that we have currently available indicates that this is not a disease that can be transmitted to humans.
Now, this is possible, though, that this finding of this deer in Meridian Township could be devastating for the deer hunting and so forth, and the deer population here for generations here in central lower Michigan.
Well, you know, what we've seen in other states is, you know, once you get a disease like this that becomes established in the deer herd, a lot of those people who are hunters but maybe don't consider it one of their primary pastimes, they tend to drop out. You know, for them, it's any concern or instance, you know, it's not worth dealing with additional restrictions. It's not dealing with, you know, the potential of shooting a sick deer. So they just drop out, and they just give up hunting.
So financially, that could be devastating to the DNR, because obviously it doesn't take very long for those numbers to become big and significant in a time when we're cutting back. But before we run out of time here, if people want to know more about this disease, learn more, be up to date, if you will, and be able to contact the DNR and become actively involved in trying to manage this problem, what's the first best resource?
Best resource is to go online. You can go to our website, michigan.gov/CWD, or just do a simple internet search, chronic wasting disease, Michigan. We've got a ton of information, FAQs, so it's really easy to get educated on that. Additionally, feel free to call any one of our field offices. We have a lot of biologists who are trained and knowledgeable on this disease and situation, and be willing to provide some knowledge for you and anybody.
Well, the other alternative is to listen to this program, because, Chad, I have the feeling over the next few weeks, months, and 3 years, You and I are going to chat a lot on this program about this and where we are in the process. It's very early on right now. Chad Stewart, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR, everybody. Chronic wasting disease, not good news for the wildlife population. It's Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
For the record, I do believe that Helly Hansen, I think that's pretty much what it's called, is the best rain gear available. You know, it looks like the guy on the Gorton's fish sticks box, you know, that big yellow rubber rain suit, which is exactly what our next friend, Alan Sachs, the professor, ought to be wearing in Texas these days. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. We're waiting around down here.
Oh, good Lord, the pictures are just stunning.
We've been a little bit luckier in the Dallas-Fort Worth area than down south of where we are in the Houston area. Some of the smaller towns in what is called the hill country of Texas, San Marcos, somewhere around Austin, they have so many little streams that usually in the springtime are a wonderful draw for people, especially a lot of college students who like to go boating down there, and they go on those big inner tubes down rivers called the Guadalupe and the Comal and all those very fascinating names that we have down here for rivers, and they're, now they're overflowing. And especially around the San Marcos area and the Wimberley area. Wimberley is sort of an artsy town where a lot of artists and writers reside outside of Austin, and they had some real problems the other day and probably still do. So it's hitting them awful hard, and more to come. Yesterday here in the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington, Texas area, we had torrential rains starting about 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, and they lasted till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Lightning strikes. In addition to the torrential downpours, there were lightning strikes everywhere. And luckily, most did not hit houses, but a few did in Dallas, and I think in some other areas close to where I am. And there's more to come. So it looks like the weather report is that this afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, the weekend afternoons, so it's not letting up anytime soon.
Yeah. Rubber glass and a duck's behind. These are the only thing, three things that are actually waterproof in the world.
And we were in a drought not too long ago. Texas was suffering from a terrible drought. And every morning, for those of us that still read newspapers, we'd get up and you'd see photos of lakes in the area, and the docks would be showing, and I mean, they're always showing, but the docks would be very dry. Lakes would be many, many feet down.
Should have bought a boat back then, see, you know, the same thing in California. I'd buy a boat now because you're going to need it.
That's right. And now it's up. So it's a strange weather pattern, but we've had this before, not recently, but many years ago we've had this before. But it's not good because now we're much more heavily populated. There's about close to 7 million people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, millions more in the Houston area, and that's where the problem is.
7 million people in Dallas. You know, I've been to Dallas. I don't think it's all that. I don't think it's all that to have 7 million people there. But what do I know? You guys are in Texas.
That's right. Well, it's a whole Dallas-Fort Worth area. Dallas itself has a population of about 1,200,000 approximately. But it's surrounded by many, many suburbs, and there's something like, I don't know, 21 different counties in this particular area, and it's close to about 7 million people in the entire Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Okay, now watch what happens next year, Professor. This can only be done by a professional. So with all these rains, Professor, and all these swollen rivers and so forth, it must be more difficult to cross the border illegally and make your way into Texas. See how that works?
That's a great question. And I'm sort of laughing about it because I've read that the border seems to be wide open. In fact, there's all sorts of interesting things, I think, that are showing up in rivers and streams, like drugs and all sorts of things. But it looks like the border is just wide open. And given the continuing chaos and rise of Islamic militancy in the Middle East and other parts of the world, it looks like some may be coming across the border. Hard to know.
But Obama got struck down yesterday by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court in New Orleans. No surprise there. It's the most conservative appeals court on the federal level in the country. Shot down his whole Dreamers Act again, another setback, and which means it could languish there for years to come. I mean, the president's legacy is being mired in court battles, whether it's gay marriage, Obamacare, the issues with immigration, illegal aliens, and so forth. Here he is bogged down in the court system.
Of course, given his attitude, I'm being very sarcastic now, he may just ignore it, you know, because the executive branch is so powerful these days. I heard a congressman by the name of Duncan Hunter, I think from California.
His
father was a congressman before him, very conservative military man. And he was saying something very startling, but I think he's on target. Representative Hunter was saying that everything in regard to foreign policy emanates from the executive branch. He says Congress has no power whatsoever in these days. And, of course, I can tell my students in a classroom, Congress does have power. They have the power of the purse. They have this power.
If they intend to use it.
Textbook. But in reality, Duncan Hunter says everything lies within the executive branch.
Except I'm going to disagree with Mr. Hunter, because at this point, the courts do have the power, because the courts can say enforce or don't enforce a law or whatever. So for border guards, for example, they know what the court ruled. The border guards are going to turn people around. They're going to deport people. They're going to proceed with the way the law is. And so the courts do have the ability, because the courts can tell county sheriffs or, you know, whoever to enforce the laws. So there is one place where the president doesn't have the control anymore, and he knows it.
If the executive branch will obey the courts, that's the deal. Hopefully we have to believe that they will, and they do. But there's such skepticism on the part of some people on this administration, you wonder from day to day if the administration really is going to obey the court orders.
Well, there you go. I guess we'll find out. And now next week, normally you're on Mondays here on the program, and this week we had to move you because of the holiday, of course. But next week you'll be back. And so I hope we have some better news from the weather down in Texas. But we'll check with you next Monday, Professor, and keep your... keep your powder dry, as they say.
It is really pretty tough down here, and I have students that commute in from all parts of the metropolitan area, so I try to be easy on them and let them leave class a little bit earlier. We're teaching summer school classes now, and I really feel for the students that have to battle this in a commute.
Yeah, tough deal. All right, Professor, we'll talk next week.
Thank you so much.
Professor Alan Sachs right here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six at the hour on this Wednesday. Welcome to it, my friends. It's the Steve Gruber program. It's the Steve Gruber Show here, and I appreciate you stopping in. If you'd like to join the conversation, your common sense is encouraged. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. So much going on, it's hard to keep up with. The Internal Revenue Service apparently hacked 100,000 people, they say. Of course, that number is going to change, guarantee it. But right now, they say 100,000 people had their information stolen through a computer hack at the Internal Revenue Service. Makes you feel comfortable, doesn't it? Wondering if you won that lottery. It will be a lot larger than 100,000, I can assure you, because it always is. They always start with a small number, and then they go, oh, yeah, I mean, we forgot a zero. It's actually a million or whatever. So that's going on. The president's illegal amnesty plan has been shot down by the federal courts in New Orleans, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals saying no to Barack Obama. No, you can't just by executive fiat change the immigration system in America, an immigration system which I say is not broken. Yeah, I know I get a lot of people, oh, it's not broken. Come on, Steve. No, it's not. It's not enforced. If the immigration system were enforced properly, it would work properly. At some point, we abdicated our responsibility from implementing and doing the things that are critical to the immigration system working. Background checks, health checks, go through the procedure, fill out the forms, show up at important appointments, don't be late, get sworn in as an American citizen, swear your allegiance to this country and this constitution, this way of life. Assimilate, not diversity, assimilation. More key to America than anything else. All these things are going on. Closer to home, a House road funding plan may get rid of Pure Michigan. Pure Michigan could be on the chopping block here. But a House road funding plan won't directly eliminate the state's popular Pure Michigan campaign. That according to one top state official. But it would cut a key source of dedicated funding that supports the tourism brand that is seen all over the country, which is a great promotional piece. Pure Michigan is wonderful. But $36 million, I believe, is the figure spent last year on Pure Michigan, half of which was spent here at home. Now, does it make sense to anyone that in Marquette they hear promotions to travel to Grand Rapids? Or in Grand Rapids to hear promotions for Lansing and Kalamazoo? I think we're all pretty familiar with our state. At least we should be. And spending $18 million to tell me to travel from Lansing to Mackinac, well, I do that anyway. I don't need money spent to tell me to travel around the state. So I think the approach is flawed. And if we can save some money there, it's a pretty good idea. Steve Arwood, the director of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, told lawmakers in Lansing yesterday, it's not to defund Pure Michigan, but several years ago, the legislature decided to put Pure Michigan within the restricted fund to give it performance, a permanence of funding, that is. Artwood testified before the brand new House Roads and Economic Development Committee, which is working its way through a 12-bill road funding package, including measures that would cut $185 million in annual funding for the MEDC. The Michigan Economic Development Council is a quasi-governmental agency that leads the state's business attraction and retention efforts. The roads plan would certainly lead to programming cuts of some kind, according to Arwood, who says the MEDC spent around $493 million last budget year, but typically spends closer to $400 annually. I don't know what I would have to do. He said Pure Michigan may still be funded, but it may not be able to be funded at the level that it is or was just agreed to in budget talks. Things are changing here in the aftermath of the defeat of Proposal 1. Arwood had previously suggested, by the way, that the entire Pure Michigan tourism effort could be defunded. House Republicans quickly attacked that as a scare tactic, and apparently it was, because apparently it's not true based on what we're hearing now. The bills would redirect $75 million in restricted funding from tobacco settlement revenue that goes to the 21st Century Jobs Fund, which is now used to fund Pure Michigan, $29 million this year, along with business and community incentives and entrepreneurial support. How do these people spend all this money? I'm serious. How do you spend this much money? For $29 million, I could have Pure Michigan pretty much everywhere. All the time. In other states. States that are nearby. Because you'd start with your border states. Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin. You would attract folks there first. And then move out in concentric rings farther out. And maybe some targeted markets in other states and bigger cities. Atlanta, maybe, if you did your research and found Atlanta was the place to be. But my God, the way money flows through government is it's unconscionable. Another $60 million would be redirected from tribal gaming compacts that flow through the state strategic fund to pay for automotive initiatives, trade missions, community development programs, Pure Michigan Business Connect, and a bunch more. So road funding is coming. It's just coming in a different form. The latest in a string of $5.4 billion worth of investments by General Motors in its U.S. facilities is now in Indiana, and I mention this one because it's close to home. General Motors reporting yesterday that it plans to put $1.2 million in its Fort Wayne assembly plant in Roanoke. You've been by it. It's just south of the border there. You've been by it probably 100 times like I have. It's where you build both light and heavy-duty versions of the GMC Sierra and Chevrolet Silverado full-size pickup trucks. The investment calls for a new paint and sealing facility, new equipment, new skillet conveyance systems, and other technology upgrades. The three-shift Fort Wayne assembly plant has about 3,800 employees, and apparently they're there to stay. So GM investing heavily in its North American operation right now. Right now, Michigan investment includes $124 million at the Pontiac Metal Center, $520 million for tooling and equipment at the Lansing Delta Township plant, where it's preparing for new products and retaining 1,900 jobs there, and $139 million for a new body shop and stamping facility upgrades at pre-production operations at the Warren Tech Center. So good news for Michigan, good news for the Midwest, and I mentioned Fort Wayne because, well, they want to be part of Michigan anyway, wouldn't you? It's 14 after the hour. It's Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Steve Gruber Show. Get the news and information vital to your world.
Brother, butter, coconut, butter, for a time, my sister had an order, what she paid for a lot. She put the lime in the coconut.
18 after the hour. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Wednesday. And, you know, we need to keep things moving around here, so we keep the gears lubed with people like Julie Gunlock, because they keep us rolling along here. Welcome back to the program, Julie.
Thanks for having me on.
Director of the Culture of Alarmism Project at the Independent Women's Forum. I like that name, by the way. I'm an alarmist, and in fact, I only want GMO soda. That's what I want. I want GMO soda because I think it makes me feel sexy. No.
Did you eat a lot of GMOs over the holiday?
Yeah, I have no idea because I don't care.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's what I was like, yeah, probably, don't we all? I mean, let's be honest. Wheat, barley, corn, it doesn't matter. It's all GMO. It's all been
Actually, there is no wheat or barley GMOs. There's corn, soy, there's some papaya, there's some other things. But actually, there aren't that many GMO products in the marketplace.
Well, you have to figure, though. You know, you say that, but I know that, like, wheat and the things you mentioned there, they've all been bred by places like Michigan State and Ohio State to be disease-resistant, pest-resistant, drought-resistant, so they've manipulated in some way.
Right. You're absolutely right. That's a good point.
So, I mean, here we are. And again, I go back to I have this vision in my head of a bunch of little kids sitting around a rice bowl in Africa. And, you know, somebody going in and snatching the rice bowl away, saying, that's got GMOs in it. You don't want that. I mean, really?
Right. That's actually what they're doing with golden rice.
Right. I mean, come on. And here they are. I mean, does the kid really care? No, what he cares about is the fact that Americans have been able to produce more grain, more food products than in the history of man. We produce more food now, despite the fact that in 1970, all the Earth Firsters Earth Day folks said, you know, they're all going to starve to death within 10 years. No. In fact, we're going to produce more food year after year after year, despite drought and other conditions. We produce more food than ever. And why? Because of GMOs. My God.
Yeah. And what's so interesting, you mentioned the environmentalists. What's so interesting about the GMO and the biotechnology issue is that environmentalists are always concerned about, you know, agrochemicals. We're using too many chemicals, and they're worried about land use. You know, there's too much. We're using too much land. But the thing is with GMOs, and they also object to GMOs, but GMOs can actually solve a lot of these problems. GMO crops require less agrochemicals, less pesticides, and because we can increase the yields on the land that is used, farmers don't have to use as much land with GMOs. So it's interesting that here's a really good solution. Science is providing us this excellent solution to some of these very difficult issues, environmental issues, and issues that even conservatives like us are concerned about. Look, you know, I think it's if we can make farming easier, if we can make yields higher, these are all good things. And then we actually satisfy a lot of these environmental concerns, and they object again. I mean, you can never make these people happy.
No, because they're professional victims. Without being a victim, they have no cause. If they have no cause, they have no purpose. And if they have no purpose, well, they're dead.
That's exactly right.
And the fact of the matter is, and I talk to farmers all the time that, you know, that are friends of mine, they produce more food using, you're right, less chemicals, less land overall, and less energy because they're producing so many bushels per acre, the amount of fuel and the tractors have become more fuel efficient and so forth, less energy to produce more food every single day.
Yeah, and the great thing about the American agriculture system is we have an opportunity here in this country to farm in different ways. If farmers choose to plant GMO seed, they can choose that way. If they want to go the conventional route, or if they want to on a much smaller scale farm organically, there are markets, there are demands out there. So there's a market for that produce. The difference is, and people like me, hey, look, if there's a demand out there, let the market work, you know, let farmers choose what is most profitable for them. But the environmentalists want to take certain choices away. They don't like conventional farming. They don't like GMO seed and GMO technology. They want us all to return to organic farming, which in and of itself certainly cannot feed the world.
No, it can't.
Feed your community.
Yeah, study after study has showed that organic farming, that's great. If that's what you're into, that's fine. And I have a big garden. I get it.
Yeah.
I like growing my own stuff. I get it. But organic farming cannot feed the world. That's a fact. And as far as eliminating GMOs, well, Chipotle famously went out there and declared, we'll not have any GMOs in our food.
So brave.
Boy, did that collapse quickly because they found out, oh, we can't do that. We can't find enough resources to find grass-fed beef or no GMO this or that. And the fact of the matter is the deer that live in Michigan could not be declared GMO-free because they eat the corn, too. I mean, wild deer and wild rabbits could not be declared GMO-free, you idiots. Come on, wake up.
I mean, it really is astounding, the alarmism around GMOs. When it's been in the food system, GMOs have been used in the food system through corn, soy, and other products for over 20 years. And then you look at certain products like papayas. The entire papaya industry in Hawaii would have collapsed if they hadn't found a genetic solution, if they hadn't found a way to tinker with the genetics of the papaya to leave it to make it resistant to the disease that was destroying the papaya crop. I mean, it would have totally destroyed the entire industry, and yet they found a solution, and people freak out about that. I mean, these things have been in the food and in the marketplace for years and years, decades.
That's right.
And there's not, and we have yet to see any kind of study showing any harm. So I wish people would really, you know, this was
the
weekend of March against Monsanto. Yeah. A lot of alarmism out there.
Yeah, I wish people would just wake up. You know, the real villain here, clearly, Julie, is America.
We
are evil, and there's no question. And in fact, if you did a survey of school kids in the most evil countries of all time, wouldn't you know that America would end up in the top five? I'm sure of it. But here's the thing. I think the next target has to be and should be John Deere. How dare those people take advantage of people that are hungry? Those bastards. All they're doing is taking advantage of hungry people. John Deere ought to be. We ought to villainize John Deere for daring.
That's right. Feed the world.
I mean, what are they thinking?
You blame America, but I blame men. I mean, I think it's all because of men.
Yeah, white men specifically. Let's not kid around. Let's not mess around here, Julie. It's white men driving John Deere tractors in America that have destroyed the world.
Let's be more specific. Yeah. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, it's just dirty, rotten farmers in America. Anyhow, Julie, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks for having me on.
Have a great day. Julie Gunlock, God, I love her. Director of Culture for the Alarmism Project at the Independent Women's Forum. Where do you find her on a regular basis? Well, right here on The Steve Gruber Show.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
All right, the hotline number here, 888-900-9966. You're listening to a Wednesday edition of the Steve Gruber Show. I appreciate your support. Going to the hotlines now, Gianni on the line with me this morning. Gianni, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I think there's a difference between, and people need to remember, there's a difference between cross-pollinating or allowing cross-strain sexual reproduction of plants to produce stronger, better strains. And it's very different to create genetic modification of the DNA of a plant by introducing anti-whatever, insecticide toxins like the glyphosate-creating gene into plants. I've looked into this because the problem is that we have more chronic diseases we cannot explain, like kidney problems, liver problems in young patients, 20, 30 years old. And there is data out there if America would start looking. But again, the market is taken over by the Monsanto media, which doesn't want to look at the studies done on the pigs of farmers that fed them GMO food versus non. And they saw a lot more miscarriages, fetal abnormalities, diseases of the organs of those pigs that were fed the GMO.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something to this.
And now, Gianni, we agree on a lot, but I'm just going to respectfully disagree on this point, because the fact of the matter is human beings live longer, more productive lives than at any time in human history, period. We have people living longer, healthier, more productive lives than ever. Do we have more diseases?
Average age is actually dropping in humans over the last few decades. Lifespan.
Not true.
There's no explanation.
The average life expectancy in the 1930s in this country was 65. And people routinely live to be 100 now, and the average life expectancy is 73 and 77 for men and women, respectively. So, and GMOs have fed the world because people like those scientists that work at Michigan State University, University of Iowa, Minnesota, Ohio State, Texas A&M, and the list goes on, have created strains of corn and so forth that are resistant to drought, resistant to disease, and we're able to feed more people on a planet. Let's remember, in 1970, the folks that put on Earth Day told us that we'd be having millions of people starve every year because there's no way we could feed the planet. Well, in fact, not only have we fed the planet, we fed the planet at an ever greater rate. And the problem that you're talking about, obesity and liver disease and kidney disease, might be tracked back to the fact that we have become complacent and sit on the couch and eat too much sugar. Sugar is a problem. High fructose corn syrup may well be a problem. But the fact that we make corn that's disease resistant, not the problem. But I'll respectfully disagree with you, Gianni, because I like your opinion on so many other things.
Sounds good.
Fair enough. Anyhow, there you have it. And that's why we have folks on here. You can share your opinion, and we can talk about these things. But in this particular case, I'm going to side with the farmers that I know and the things that are going on that have worked. And again, if a bunch of kids are sitting around eating rice in places where otherwise they would be starving, and it's GMO rice, do you think the kid cares? And my answer is obviously, absolutely not. Shifting gears now, Patrice Lee is with us now, the senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, director of outreach at Generation Opportunity. And welcome back to the program, Patrice.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I'm here to talk about the minimum wage. And I think it's interesting that, because you note in an article here that Warren Buffett, the sage of Omaha, has said, no, we should not raise the minimum wage. No, we should increase welfare is what we should. I mean, that's the way I read it, because he said we should increase the earned income tax credit. And no matter how you slice that, you can call it what you want and put a bow on it. But, you know, handouts are handouts.
Well, I think Warren Buffett makes an interesting point, which is most importantly that raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour makes no sense. And it's bad for jobs and it's bad for the economy. It actually comes at a very interesting time because Los Angeles just raised their minimum wage rate to $15 an hour. So, I mean, Buffett proposes that we do boost the earned income, that tax credit, the earned income tax credit, sorry about that. And you know, whether you look at it as a handout or you look at it as a way to incentivize job growth and working, it's actually a different proposal than we're hearing from the left.
Well, you know, and if you go read, this is a pretty interesting thing. It's interesting you bring this because here recently I read an article in Forbes about the failure of the experiment in the city of Seattle, where they raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And you know what? Guess what? People are losing jobs and their hours are being cut back and businesses aren't, you know, just ponying up, as Patty Murray, the raging communist senator from the state of Washington, would have you believe. The fact is, raising minimum wage does have an impact, just like the conservatives said it would, and it's not good. I mean, it's not good to raise it to $15 an hour because here in Seattle, it's failing.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's not just that people are losing jobs and having their hours cut. You're talking about small businesses that can't afford to pay higher rates, and especially when you look at bakeries or restaurants where what their earnings, their profit is very marginal. You know, they can't afford the incremental costs in wages. So, you know, you're going to see more than just lost jobs, which are bad enough, but you're going to see small businesses going out of business. And this is over the long term. So I think you'll see these impacts having a rippling impact across your economy.
Well, as you look at it here, I've got some statistics here from the state of Washington. I just pulled up while we're talking. The state's share of entry-level service jobs fell by 5.7%, while nationally, those jobs increased by 6.3%. So that's a 12-point swing in the wrong direction for Seattle because they implemented this $15 an hour minimum wage. Now, do I understand the ability to live and work someplace, you know, and be able to afford it? I do. But this is not the answer. But unfortunately, Patrice, I don't think that the earned income child tax credit is the answer either. Because when you have the government giving back, you know, $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 to people, more than they gave in, and multiply that by millions across the country, that is not sustainable either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solution. It's probably not the best one. And, you know, even Buffett acknowledges that there are problems with it. It's not a perfect system. It's an opportunity for people to defraud the government and to take more than they actually earn. What we really need is really good job growth. And how you do that? Well, part of it is you cut regulations that cost businesses. So Obamacare is a great example of how, you know, may have been intended as a good thing actually raises the cost of doing business and raises the cost of workers. And so things like the minimum wage, things like Obamacare, these are things that we need less of. We actually need more stimulatory policies that encourage people to start businesses and to grow their businesses.
What we need is less regulation, period. You know, what Ronald Reagan did, and I don't care what people on the left have to say, Ronald Reagan eliminated government regulations, control, oversight, the onerous presence of government, and created the 25 to 30 year boom in American history for economics, the greatest time of innovation, expansion, job creation. It's because you need the government out of the way. And if you do that, you'll have more revenue in the end to do the things you need to do. And that's just, you know, and anybody that doesn't get that very good lesson and doesn't understand the lesson at hand, I'm sorry, I can't help them too much. Patrice, I'll give you the last word.
I think, you know, I'm encouraged to see that Buffett would actually come out in support of not raising minimum wages. Now we need to get him on board and some of his left friends on board on policies that limit government, lower taxes for everyone, but particularly the job creators and the wealth generators in this country.
There you go. Patrice, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, have a great day. There you have it. Patrice Lee, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. Warren Buffett, don't raise the minimum wage. He's right about that. But give back more welfare dollars, and I think he's wrong about that one. It's 41 after the hour on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Steve Gruber Show, jump starting your day with the news that matters.
Take a look at my life, I'm a lot like you. I need someone to love me the whole day through.
45 after the hour now. It's the Steve Gruber Show here on this Wednesday. The hotline number, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Help me there, Alex. There you go. All right. Sam on the line on the hotline in Grand Rapids. Sam, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning. I had a point to make about the GMO issue. To best of my knowledge, there's never been any cause and effect studies done on the effects of genetically modified crops. And I mean, genetically modified crops go back to the age of Gregor Mendel. He's the guy who pretty much started the science of that, and I think that was 17th or 18th century. I would have thought if there was an issue involved in genetically modified crops that maybe the effects would have been felt before now. I have a theory regarding why we have a lot of people who are ill today. Number one, I think, is that our science is better and we're able to identify things better. And also that because of the Herculean medical efforts that are expended today, I think there are a lot of people that 50 or 100 years ago wouldn't have survived because they physically weren't strong enough, and they're passing their genes on through they're procreating and passing their genes on, and we're actually hurting the gene pool by some of these physically weak human beings procreating. I know that's a difficult thing to have to admit to ourselves, but that's just a theory I have regarding it.
Well, I think that genetically modified organisms there is a cause and effect. They exist, and the cause is we've been able to feed a lot more people on the planet and a lot less starvation. There isn't mass famine on the planet today. You know, when I was growing up in the 1970s, I mean, Ethiopia and other places were in the middle of mass famines for years. You don't hear about that much anymore. Sam, thank you for checking in. I greatly appreciate it. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. My next guest is Duran Martinez, the host of Wild Michigan, the radio program that focuses on the outdoors, hunting, fishing, and so forth across the great state of the Michigan Talk Network. Duran, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And we spoke yesterday for a while because for both of us, this news that the white-tailed deer population has been confirmed to have chronic wasting disease, and right here in the heart of the southern part of the state, seems it's crazy. I don't know how it got here. But here it is, and it's not good news.
No, it's not. And really, Meridian Township, it was such a shock to hear that. But then again, if you look at the concentrated populations of the area and what we're seeing with urban populations, you know, with subdivisions sprouting up and what was formerly, field and farm, deer aren't going to move. They're going to take the easiest route possible for food and shelter. And, you know, they're not going to be hunted in those areas. I mean, Meridian Township has done a very good job of implementing an urban hunting season to try and thin out some of this herd. But, you know, it wasn't a question, you know, we've talked about this. It wasn't a question of where. It's just a question of when this was going to happen.
Well, you know, and the thing is, oh, it's shocking here. And now what happens is they implement their plan, which has been in place for a long time. And they've been waiting for a long time. In case this happens. So now they put in the plan. The plan includes, you know, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representatives that will have 223s with silencers, and they will, frankly, they'll execute these deer at night so people don't see it because they don't want the animal rights people involved in the conversation. They don't need a circus. They need to do some scientific work, the scientific work being is to test as many deer as possible. But can you only imagine, you know, if the animal rights people got their hands on this one, there'd be, you know, people, you know, It'd be ugly.
Look, here's the thing. This is the problem that you and I both have with animal rights people in general, is what we are trying to do is keep the herd healthy, keep the numbers strong, and make a better habitat for these deer, but all they are seeing is us coming in and culling a few deer that may infect a whole herd. I mean, again, this is worst case scenario. I'm not trying to preach any gloom and doom, but it could be a big wreck for us financially. But the testing has to be done, and this is for the betterment of the whole herd.
Well, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is it has to be done. It reminds me of a situation I was involved in Yellowstone National Park a long time ago, 20 years or more. And they had to go in and study the buffalo for brucellosis, the disease in that herd. And they shot three buffalo, and then there was a court order to stop it. The animal rights people got a court order, and they were never able to study the disease brucellosis effectively. So I hope that that doesn't happen here, because the disease in the herd would devastate the herd if it goes unchecked over time, and you would have no herd. Or you could devastate the herd right now, which they're going to do, and hopefully bring isolation, you know, quarantine the deal so you can move forward.
you know, there's a, what we're trying to do is to let people know that this is an isolated incident. Yes, we're probably going to find more, but to remain calm, to educate yourself, and to help the DNR with, you know, reporting roadkill deer in the core areas, and keep an eye out. Keep an eye on the deer that are coming through right now.
Yeah, and I know I'm in contact with some other folks, and I know that there's at least one more case being studied out in Eastern Ingham County. We'll know more about that in the next couple of days. Hopefully it turns out to be negative. Duran, I appreciate your time. You're a good man. Wild Michigan can be found right here on this station and across the Michigan Talk Network, but I'm sure you and I will be talking about this both on and off the air for a long time to come.
I'm sure of it. Thanks again, Steve. Appreciate it.
Hi, Duran Martinez, everybody. Wild Michigan, don't miss it. He's also the guy sitting in. He'll be here next week for me, by the way. Quickly to the hotline, Don on the line in Lansing. Don, welcome to the program.
Yeah, one thing about the raising of minimum wage, what the Democrats probably are thinking is if we raise the minimum wage, we're going to get more taxes in, and that's probably their only thought about it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that, you know, you wonder about that. They say, well, see, here's the thing, though. They still want to raise the minimum wage and still give away the earned income tax credit, so, you know, keep giving away as much of your money and mine as possible. You know?
Yeah, but they still get the tax on the front end.
All right. All right. Have a great day. We'll talk soon. Number 888-900-9966. Go to the hotline now. Here is Dana in Grand Rapids. Dana, welcome to the program.
Hi. Good morning, Steve. I have a comment on GMOs. I wasn't sure what side of the fence I was on, but I'm always suspicious when people fight desperately hard. There have been many lawsuits brought against Monsanto, and they always seem to lose. And why is it that they fight so desperately not to have GMO labeling on packages? And also, there's one other thing. The former head lawyer of Monsanto is, I believe he runs the FDA under Obama, and he has for years.
No, I don't know about that. What I know is this.
With them.
Like the previous caller just told us, GMO has been going on for a couple of hundred years, maybe longer, since this all began. As a result of modification of seed grains and so forth, we've had an opportunity to feed more people on the planet than we otherwise would have. You know, I don't see, you know, people say, well, there's more chronic illness. Well, people live longer, for God's sake, than we ever have, because we're living longer. You know why? Nutrition, in large part. Nutrition, medication, communication, transportation, these are things that America has brought to the world, the four great pillars of America, and those come from GMOs. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Dana. The scientists that work at Michigan State University and the University of Michigan and Western and Northern, they're all scientists that work on these things, too. They have families, children and grandchildren. I don't think they're out poisoning their kids. I'm sorry, I don't buy that. And I'm going to tell you, I trust my neighbors that work at these great Michigan colleges and universities to make a safe food product for us. And apparently it's worked, because I can walk around and see a whole lot of people that weigh a whole lot more than they should. And I think that's from overt nutrition. We're over, you know, feeding our people, not underfeeding. We're not starving, and we don't have mass famine anywhere else on the planet. You don't want to know why? America, for God's sake, and in part, GMOs. Dana, always a pleasure. Thanks for checking in. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Wednesday. We'll be right back.
Common Sense Radio.
straightforward, and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
6 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday, and while I'm going down this rabbit hole of GMOs and so forth, we might as well just enjoy the trip down there, right? The fact of the matter is that these genetically modified organisms have been around for a very long time. These genetically modified organisms have helped very much in feeding the world. The fact of the matter is that when they are pest resistant, drought resistant, disease resistant, these grains help feed the world. Led by America, by the way, and American universities in large part. And you go walk around and you look at the general health of people. And then go pick up a history book and read about the general health of people in 1850. Or 1925. Or 1750 or 1650. Figure out the average life expectancy of those people in those days. Well, life expectancy is going down. It might have gone down. There might be a hiccup. It might have gone down slightly. Obviously, there's some point, no matter how much nutrition medication we have, there is a point of no return. There is a law of diminishing returns that we learned, obviously, in school years ago. No matter how much more money you spend, the incremental increase in benefit is negligible or negative. And so the law of diminishing returns plays at some point. However, when you know that the average life expectancy in America in 1935 was 65, and now it's well into the 70s for both men and women, 73, I think, and 77, 78. And for many people, living to be 90 or 100. Common. Two of my grandparents lived into their 90s. Three of my grandparents lived into their 90s. I mean, is it because they were the exception? No. They're not really the exception. They're very common. People living over 100 is very common today. The oldest people living on the planet any given day will be about 114, 115. Think about that. 114 or 115 years old. And it's in large part to do with nutrition. And, you know, other things have gone on as far as myths go. You know, I've talked about cholesterol here, and now the FDA will soon make official the fact that cholesterol is not a nutrient of concern. Not a nutrient of concern on any level. Even though for 60 years we were told that cholesterol was dangerous. In fact, people with higher cholesterol levels live longer. People with higher cholesterol live longer than people with lower cholesterol levels, and that has been proven time and again, study after study now. And it's hard for you to comprehend, I realize, because of what we've been taught and brainwashed into believing. Inundated with these messages that Crestor and Lipitor will save our lives. Well, I dispute that possibility. Low total cholesterol is associated with high total mortality rate in patients with coronary heart disease. And these studies have been coming out for years. So I'm going to go ahead and focus on things that I know to be true. And I know that cholesterol is good for my brain. It's good for me as a person. It's good, just good. And not to mention the over-medication of people, you know, medicating people all the time with Lipitor and Crestor, powerful chemicals that have tremendous side effects. But overall, medications have been a boon to mankind. They've been a great thing. But like so many things, it can be abused as well. Here in Michigan, the Department of Natural Resources is shifting gears now. The Department of Natural Resources has confirmed the first case of a free-ranging white-tailed deer infected with chronic wasting disease. It was confirmed yesterday. I put the story out early yesterday. Later in the day, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources confirmed what I had been reporting. There's now an established core CWD area, primarily in Ingham County, but with parts of Shiawassee and Clinton counties as well. A core CWD area where they will attempt to kill as many deer as possible. Using U.S. Fish and Wildlife snipers, many deer will be shot. Many deer will be tested, trying to determine how many deer may be infected with chronic wasting disease. I do know there's at least one deer being studied 16 miles to the east of where this one was found. I know this to be a fact. That deer is still alive. Joe is on the line and Owasso on the hotline. Joe, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm lovely. And you?
That's good. Well, pretty good. I just wanted to take a little contention on what you were saying. I really believe that over the next 25 to 30 years, you're going to see the age of life go down. Not for all individuals. I think there will be, you know, any female born after the age of after 1984, they predicted that 7 out of 10 will make 100. But what you're going to see is that with the health care coming the way it is with Obamacare, it will be a two-tier system. It'll be the people that fall under the general guideline, which will be forced into large and larger quantities of general health care practitioners, not the subspecialists. You're also seeing, you know, the rise in the diabetes, some of the other, you know, diseases. They'll still come through with breakthroughs. I think the next big breakthrough you'll see will be in MS or multiple sclerosis. But what you're going to see is that, you know, the health of America, there will be more people being seen, but it's going to be of a lesser quality unless you have a lot of money. Because what you're going to end up with is they don't have death panels. Well, what they're going to say is you're 82. You've got comorbid diseases, diabetes. You've had a couple of stents put in your heart. We're not going to spend $45,000 on a bypass. We're going to give you a $400 wheelchair. But if you want to spend your own money on a bypass, you can do it. And it'll be what they have over in Europe, the two-tiered health system, and it's going to be here.
I actually think there's going to be a three-tiered system because the rich people can buy anything they want always.
Yes.
And then you're going to have the folks that are lumped in the middle that get, you know, the standard issue, and then the poor folks that still don't get involved and have nothing at the bottom. I think you're going to have a three-tiered system just like that. The people with the money are going to buy what they need anyway, whether it's here or they get on a plane and go elsewhere, they'll get what they need. And then the large bulk of people will be in the middle, and then a few on the bottom end, and that'll be that. Joe, okay. Thanks for stepping in, and you're right. I got to run. It's 14 okay. After the hour on the Steve Gruber Show this Wednesday. Thank you for stopping in. The phone number, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Bring the common sense. We appreciate it.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
After the hour, I believe I have the best listeners in radio. I chuckle at things that are written. Some things I can repeat on the air, and well, some things I can't. They make me laugh even louder sometimes. Our good friend is Senator Rick Jones from Grand Ledge. He always busy. I don't know if anybody works harder in working in the state legislature, but Senator Jones sets a bar that's very high. Senator, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Do you sleep much?
Oh, I get about 5 hours a night.
Yeah, about 5 hours. See, most people would be dysfunctional after a period of time, and you're always happy, got a smile on your face. I appreciate that. Anyhow, I had you back here because you've been working on some things, and I thought it was about time for an update on powdered alcohol, for start of alcohol. Where are we in that process of banning that altogether here in the state?
Powdered alcohol has gone through the Senate unanimously. It's over in the House, and I expect they will soon take it up and pass it out of there.
And it'll get, make it, any indication on this one from the governor as to where he might stand on palcohol. Palcohol, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, palcohol is a powdered form of alcohol. I guess you could take it and mix it into water, I suppose, and make yourself a cocktail. Of course, the problems are obvious. Easy to get around, easy for people underage to get their hands on, easy to overconsume, because I think if you put, you know, three or four packets in, you know, a glass or whatever, or did you just eat it dry? I don't know. But could be dangerous. Anyhow, what do you think the governor's position might be?
I am quite certain the governor will sign this one. It's a substance that absolutely nobody wants or really needs. I guess there were a couple of stores in Flint that said they'd like to sell it, but the substance can just be abused in so many ways. And one of the things we have to realize is alcohol is a poison. And we recently lost a young female student over at MSU that consumed too much. Well, that's pretty hard to do. Usually a young person has to drink about a fifth, you know, and they fall over dead, which is a horrible problem. But the powder will make it much easier to make that mistake.
Yeah, you would think. And, you know, I mean, because I guess you could consume it in the powder form too, right?
According to all of the reports I've read, you can consume it any way you want. You can put it on a pizza. You can put it on avocados. You can mix it into water, cola, anything you want. And you can mix a real powerful alcoholic drink. And the bars are really nervous about 18, 19, 20-year-olds smuggling in the college bar, buying a cola, pouring it in there, and being able to drink with their older buddies.
Well, you know, the thing you just said, you know, sprinkle it on an avocado or a pizza or whatever, you know, that, I mean, the ability to overconsume and not realize it. When you're drinking a drink, you know, if you, like you said, drink a fifth of whiskey, you know, your body rebels against that at some point. And I just wonder if the poisoning rate would be higher. I don't know, but I see your concerns. The other thing that I see these all the time, and I knew at some point there'd have to be regulation on that, and that's e-cigarettes. You know, minors getting their hands on e-cigarettes. Where are we with that?
Well, that's another bill I passed to the Senate unanimously. All of my bill does is says stores may not sell them to anybody under the age of 18. They are a nicotine delivery device, and they are not a tobacco cigarette. Many people use them to get off of tobacco cigarettes, which I think is a good thing. But we don't want kids getting a hold of these things because they're going to get addicted to nicotine. Now, I've had a dispute in the past with the governor on this. The governor would like to treat them as tobacco cigarettes, which means they would have the really high tax on them. And if the local pub wanted to allow them, you could not. You know, right now it's up to the owner of the local pub or establishment can make a decision whether or not e-cigarettes are in their place of business.
Sure.
And but as soon as you call them tobacco cigarettes, they're banned.
Right now here, and they're not tobacco cigarettes, so I mean that'd be akin to, you know, calling a squirt gun a firearm. It's not. It may look like one, it may act like one, but it's not. And so I guess my question to the governor is, why would he want to do it? Is it for the tax dollars? Because the point of banning cigarettes in restaurants and so forth is to keep patrons from smelling the smoke or the noxious fumes and the real health concerns associated with secondhand smoke, but you don't have those concerns with an e-cigarette. You don't have the concerns of those dangerous toxins in the air, those carcinogenics in the air.
Well, that's correct. It's water vapor, and in fact, it's not even called smoking. It's vaping, and you know, there is no smoke put in the air. And I don't smoke. I've never smoked. And I have sat right next to somebody using this product. It's not offensive in any way.
Yeah, but we, on the same token, we don't want kids having their hands on it because that, well, that could create a lifetime of problems, as we know. So I always ask, why not just make, you know, tobacco illegal? Why not just make cigarettes illegal? I get a lot of pushback for that. People frown frown at me when I say that. But if you have a product that you know is killing 500,000 Americans a year, and it is, smoking kills 500,000 Americans each and every year, why don't we just, you know, ban cigarettes altogether?
Well, that's a good point. I think the dirty little secret is there's a huge amount of tax dollars generated by cigarettes. And while states would like people to stop smoking, they don't want the money to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that. Senator, I greatly appreciate your time. Thank you for the update, my friend.
Have a great day.
There you have it. Senator Rick Jones, everybody. The hardest working man, I think, in state politics. 5 hours a day, every day. And if you ever see the guy, whenever you see him, he's always smiling. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Always got a smile on his face, wants to shake your hand, see what's going on. This man is, he's a good guy. I think Senator Rick Jones is a good guy. 25 after the hour here on the Steve Gruber Show on this Wednesday. We'll take a look at news. Plus, we'll talk about chronic wasting disease and check in on what's going on with the historic flooding in Texas. It's all straight ahead on the Steve Gruber Show.